This is an RNZ podcast.
Kia ora, a belated Happy New Year. It's great to be back with Country Life. I'm Carol Stiles.
And I'm William Ray. Hello. On Country Life today, the surf's up for farmers in Canterbury.
We meet a dairy farmer who's as proud as punch of his champion Holstein Friesian, Sue.
In our feature, we're meeting four boys who are making money out of honey.
But first, we're off for a look around the country where, so far, it's been a long, dry summer. Parts of Northland haven't grown any grass this year. Kikuyu is growing on heavier soils, but even it's struggling in the heat and the dry. It feels like late February. Bull farmers are trying to sell stock where they can, but there are so many animals headed to the works, some people are only able to get 20% of the stock they want to unload killed. Some farms have silage or baleage on hand, but others don't. So those farmers are just making sure there's good water and are accepting that cattle will only put on a fraction of the weight they would typically gain at this time of year. Milk production on dairy farms is slowing down considerably. The bull schedule has dropped 50 cents a kilogram. We were told some useless drizzle was falling in Pukekohe on Friday morning. There's been no significant rain for a month. Main crop onions are being dried off and removed to the packing sheds, with harvesting machinery creating dust clouds so thick the operators are struggling to see where they're going. The ground is very hard, so unless irrigation has been applied before potatoes are harvested, the digging machines are damaging potato skins.
Southern and eastern Waikato isn't as dry as central and northern parts of the region. Feed is getting tight and lots of farms have moved to once-a-day milking, which in some cases is months earlier than usual. If there's no significant rain, it's expected that lots of herds in central and northern Waikato will be dry by the end of February. A lot of supplements being fed and the price of palm kernel has jumped. On sheep and beef properties, the hills are drying out. Southern King Country's not looking too bad because it's had some rain. Lamb prices have dropped back a bit. Apart from a scanty 2 millimetres, parts of the Bay of Plenty haven't had any rain since December the 25th. 2 weeks of wind followed Christmas, which will have caused windrub damage in kiwi fruit. A lot of thinning is taking place, an indication pollination was good. There are signs there could be record volumes of kiwifruit this year. Kiwifruit orchards are selling. The same can't be said of dairy farms. They still have feed after a good October, November and December, but need rain now. Unfortunately, it's not in the forecast. The farmer we speak to is milking once a day in the morning. The team's finished by 9 and are relieved not to have to work in the heat of the day.
The first 3 weeks of December were wet in Taranaki, and since then there's been one day of rain that delivered between 10 and 18 millimetres. The ag consultant we speak to says Taranaki is on target to have the driest January in the 40 years he's been collecting rainfall data. But there is another week to go. Then there's February to come, which is usually a dry month. He says it's been unpleasantly dry, cold and windy, and the sea's pretty cold too. The province is still reasonably green though. Milk production's holding quite well. Across the island, and rain 10 days ago around Gisborne has been enough to keep the region ticking over. There's plenty of feed, but water is a bit of a worry. Autumn didn't deliver its usual storms to fill up dams, so they're drying up more quickly than most years. It's all go for the squash and corn harvests.
Hawke's Bay's plum growers are in the thick of their harvest too. The fruit's looking great this year, big and juicy, and there are lots of varieties to choose from. Pastoral farms have turned their Hawke's Bay summer hue, but a farmer says it's nothing out of the ordinary and stock are doing fine. Manawatu and Rangatike farms are starting to get a bit dry in places and farmers are unloading stock, killing space is hard to get. We're told that in Wairarapa, God has been out with his big brown paintbrush. There's been precious little rain and people are buttoning down for a big dry. The wind's been horrible. It went on a month longer than usual and does a lot of damage to already dry soils. Lambs have done well though. They're nice and heavy.
Across Cook Strait, and apple growers in the Nelson Motueka region are flat out thinning smaller and marked fruit from trees. Thinning's underway in kiwifruit orchards too. It's very dry and temperatures are above average, so irrigation systems are going full bore. Water restrictions on Waimea Plains are expected to start next week. A hill country farmer near Blenheim in Marlborough says only 2 millimetres of rain went into his water gauge in January, but there's still feed on hand. Most hill farms have finished weaning, while high country properties are just getting into it. The lamb schedule has dropped back a bit from the record pre-Christmas high of $150. It's a busy time in the province's vineyards. Our contact says his Pinot Noir and Chardonnay grapes are moving into the veraison, or onset of ripening stage. The Sauvignon Blanc variety is not far behind. Currently, the vineyard's carrying 19 to 20 tonnes a hectare. This will be reduced to 17 tonnes a hectare for harvesting. Everyone's busy with botrytis control programs and making sure the vines are getting enough water.
A West Coast dairy farmer at Runanga says it's hot and dry. Some of his paddocks are starting to go brown in patches. There's still enough grass around for his cows, but he says farmers are starting to buy in supplementary feed. Milk production this season's doing okay, but is down on last year. Most bulls have been taken out of paddocks and pregnancy testing's underway. Spraying's required on this winter's brassica crop due to an infestation of hungry insects. So far, Canterbury's experiencing a hot, dry summer, and the forecast is set for this to continue. Region-wide fire bans are now in place. It's not all bad, as this weather is great for harvest on cropping farms, which is just beginning.
Central Otago had a good amount of rain last year, but so far in 2020, there's not been a drop. A farmer at Ōturahua says everyone's into weaning and crutching and are sending the first draft of lambs to the works. Coastal Southland's gone from very wet and windy to hot and dry. Our contact, who farms at Waimahaka, says the ground's starting to crack in places and fire restrictions are in place. Cows are getting a top-up of fodder beet and scanning's due to start next week. All the tractor work's done and winter crops that went in prior to Christmas are growing well, but could do with a drink. The farmer, who also has sheep, says he's weaning late as he's had the sheep on young grass before the cows because they have a lighter footprint and they clean up the weeds.
This is Country Life on RNZ National 101 FM.
Now we're heading to North Canterbury with Cosmo to meet Robbie Wakelin, who runs a dairy farm with his brother John at West Ayrton. Robbie's passionate about his herd of Holstein Friesians.
We're in the paddock with our herd at the moment. We're just showing you Sue, my favourite cow anyway. But yeah, we're out here with the cows.
It's a lovely day.
Yeah, it's not too bad actually. Wouldn't mind some rain at some point, but it hasn't been too bad so far. It's starting to dry off, but we're not as bad as a lot of other people. We're lucky we've got the pivot and good irrigation here, so yeah.
How's the season going so far?
We're up on the season and the cows are doing quite well. Mating didn't go too badly and I think most of them are getting their own calf. We've still got the bulls out at the moment, but they're not getting that many anymore, so it's not really too high on our priority list to get them all in calf since we winter milk and we basically calve all year round, so it's not really a huge thing for us, but it's nice to get them in calf when you want them to, yeah.
Were you and John brought up on this farm?
No, we grew up in Spencerville, just north of Christchurch. The dad's farm was there. And in 2011, we converted this, which was our runoff lot. We just took baleage off it and took it back to the other farm and had our young stock and dry cows and stuff here. And it's 94 hectares here. And we moved up here and put the shed on, the pivot on, and just everything's gone from there, really. We've been developing the place ever since. It sort of never stops, but we've just been increasing production every year since then. Yeah, it's been a lot of work, but I think we're finally sort of up to date with what we're doing now, yeah.
Now, Sue, the Holstein Friesian that's beside us, is a champion cow.
Yeah, she did not too bad, actually. I bought her as a calf at the Canterbury show because I thought she was pretty good and I really liked that family, and we'd been buying a couple from that family beforehand to try and get a really good one, and saw her and thought that's the one. So we went and I managed to buy a half share in her. That's all my co-owner would let me buy of her. But yeah, no, we brought her home and she's sort of just gone from strength to strength ever since. She was, the year I bought her, she was reserve junior champion. We took her back next year and she was South Island junior champion. And then she won as a two-year-old, a three-year-old, and then she won again this year and she won champion cow, and supreme champion cow, and yeah, not too bad, really.
So you weren't too concerned about Ambovis and, you know, taking your cows to the show?
Nah, well, it's always a consideration in your head, but I think everyone's more worried about being traced rather than actually getting it at the show. But we didn't show last year at all. We just did sort of on-farm competitions and photo competitions and stuff like that. But we were like, well, we can go and we'll take every precaution and I think we'll be fine. Like at the show, there's so many precautions we take. We have our own sort of wash bays and the cows are always separate and there's like 2 metres between each of them all the time. So we're sort of very careful about that sort of thing. And we thought, well, we might as well keep going. And we missed it and it sort of makes life a bit more interesting getting to go and compete against the other people that breed in Canterbury. And I said, like, there's some of the best breeders in New Zealand are in Canterbury and show at Christchurch. So we just sort of wanted to go back and have a go. And we went back and we won basically everything. We won with the jerseys too.
Now, Sue's full name is Clover Lane Aftershock Sue ET. That's a bit of a mouthful. Why has she got such a long name?
Oh, so what we do is we have the stud name, the person who bred her is at the start, that's Clover Lane. So Duncan Pipe owns half of her and he bred her. So that's Clover Lane. The aftershock's her father's name. And then her name is Sue. So it's just just the way that we do it. And E.T., she was an embryo. She was, so Duncan flushed her mother. He got one low-grade embryo and put it in and didn't think it would ever hold in anything. So just put it in a cow that was there that was synced up that they didn't think would get in calf. And then she got in calf, she had a heifer, and then she turned out that good. So I think that was just luck. But yeah, and she'll have excellent after her name too, because she's been classified excellent.
What is it about her that makes her a champion?
She's just got so much capacity and she's so correct. Like, her udder's still well up there. She did 12,000 litres as a 4-year-old. And her udder's still very well attached and she's got such a good ligament and she loves going to the show. She, like, you just walk out into the ring, she just puts her head up and chews her cud while she's walking around and she just stands up perfectly. It's like she's showing herself off just all the time. You sort of aim for that 2 hours in the year for them to look perfect and you're sort of getting them ready for that 2 hours like the whole time. And the like day before and like even like 2 or 3 hours before the ring, I was like, I don't think she's going to get there. And then I was busy out in the ring with the other cows we'd taken. And she got let out, my helpers let her out to the ring to me. And I was like, well, she just looks perfect. You couldn't get her looking any better. And she just went out there and you sort of didn't want to say you knew she was going to win, but she looked pretty damn awesome that day. And she's pretty good in the herd too. She did 800 solids as a 4-year-old, so it's a...
Wow, so how many litres a day can she produce?
I think she maxed out at about 60 litres that year, but she's not doing too bad this year either. Yeah, she makes a lot of milk.
She looks a bit bigger than some of the other cows.
Oh yeah, she's probably been spoilt. And it's sort of the way that she's bred too. Like, we've got a lot of, most of our cows you call moderate-sized Holsteins. But some of them are getting quite big, but she's quite a big one. That's just the way that she's been bred.
Do you know most of your cows?
Yep. They've all got names. I know all their names. My brother knows all their names and their numbers, so it's good to have him around for, like, herd testing and stuff. He just goes and writes their numbers down. But, yeah, they've all got names. I can go and tell you all their family history and stuff. That's out of Sue's sister walking across there. So I've got a few of them now, and her daughter I can see way over there. But it makes things interesting to have cow families and to be interested in the breeding side of things. So
yes,
we've been doing that for a while now. I think the stud started in like 1960. Dad started it then, and he's kept breeding good cows, and we sort of just built on the foundation that he had made. Yeah.
Does he still take an interest?
No, he passed away when I was 13, but, like, we've just kept on going with what he started. Continuing the Bellbrook stud, and he always bred for good udders, and we've continued on with that, and just the rest of the conformation of the cow, we've been improving, and we've got, I counted up the other day, we've got 128 excellent cows, which is the highest score you can get for classifying Holsteins. And last year, the Holstein International did a tally up of the most in the world. And I think we came 7th in the world for the amount of excellent cows in the herd. So that's pretty cool.
How many cows have you got?
We peak milk about 300, and we milk 150 through the winter.
Why do you milk through the winter? Because I guess most people stop, don't they?
Yeah, we always have, and sort of, you've got the cow shed there, you might as well be milking something. And so we've got enough land and stuff that we can make supplements and stuff. We grow kale for them in the winter, and like you have to get rid of too many good cows or have too many cows carrying over, and I think it's just more efficient just to keep milking these cows that will keep making the milk. You'll have cows that have been milking for a year still doing two solids, so it's worth milking them through. Mm. So we get down to 150 cows, and that's just four rows in the cow shed, so we just keep milking them.
Yeah.
It's just one person in the shed. Takes us an hour and a half, and then you're back to doing other jobs again.
In terms of running a dairy farm, is it becoming more challenging with the environmental screws being turned on dairy farmers?
It's quite disheartening, really. You have sort of the lower-end people, the people who are doing the damage, being the ones that are amplified around the country, and that's what, like, the mainstream media will publicise and stuff, and you all get tarnished with the same brush. But, like, we've started this, we've got a soil consultant, and we've started, like, reducing the amount of N that we put on, so we're only putting, I think it's 130 units of N on this entire year, and we've been doing a few things like that and sort of feeding the soil rather than just putting fertiliser on to feed the grass, and we're putting microbe feeders and all different stuff like that, and it seems to be working because we're like well up on the season and the cows are doing better and the cows look healthier and using a lot less supplement than we used to, so we're trying to do things right, but we'll see what happens. You never know what's going to happen, really. But we're just trying to do our best and see what happens. And I think that sort of thing is the thing that you've got to publicise so that people can understand what's actually happening rather than what's the stories they get told, basically, yeah.
Now, Robbie, you've been selected to attend the 15th World Holstein Friesian Federation Conference in Switzerland. Tell me about that.
Yeah, that was quite exciting. The Holstein Friesian Association selected me. I think there was about 17 people that applied for it this year, which is a lot for a lot of the things that they put out there that people apply for. And then I was lucky enough that they rang me up and asked me to do it. And so I'm off in middle of March. We're going to do a tour through south of Germany and do some touristy things, and we're going to see some brown Swiss cows and a Hereford farm, and then we're going to the World Holstein Conference, and there the Swiss major show is being done at the same time, so I get to go to that, so I'm quite excited about going to see the best show cows and see what they are like. I've heard they're amazing, and you see on Facebook some of the pictures that come up of the European cows and they look pretty damn good, so that'll be exciting. Yeah.
And what's happening for the rest of the day?
We're going to start calving, so we've dried a few cows off this morning, and we'll take them away and get some springers and bring them home from our runoff blocks, and just odd jobs and milking again tonight. And it's a good time of year, there's not too much happening. We'll start getting busy again soon, but it's sort of the time when we can have a bit of time off and relax before it gets busy again. You don't get much time to relax between August and December, so January is basically your time to sort of wind down.
That was dairy farmer and Holstein Friesian stud breeder Robbie Wakelin.
Ag journalist Sandra Taylor is helping get Canterbury farmers into surfing. Earlier this week, Cosmo Kentish Barnes caught up with her and a bunch of farmers in wetsuits at a Christchurch beach.
I'm a very keen open water swimmer, and I just know how fantastic you feel after you've been in the salt water. And as part of my job, I interviewed a guy, Stephen Thompson, up in Gisborne last year, who'd set up the initiative Surfing for Farmers up there. He did it because he had seen a documentary titled Resurface, which highlighted how salt water, well, cold water, and surfing had benefited vets coming back from Afghanistan in the USA, and it has been really healing for them, and it captured his attention. He was a keen surfer, so he set up Surfing for Farmers in Gisborne, and it was a real hit. So I interviewed him, and I thought I'd like to get it set up down here.
And up there, they've got about, what, 50 farmers now?
Well, they started off with, I think, 5 and ended up with 50 by the end of the season. And I did hear that there was a group of women who carried on surfing all winter, who were so inspired, and they got themselves organised and went right through the year, which is fantastic.
So how have you organised the surfboards and the surf instructors? And do the farmers have to pay?
No, the farmers pay nothing. Stephen's initiative was very much that farmers don't actually have to pay anything. He doesn't want them to have any reason not to come. So we provide the surfboards and the instruction. We have to seek funding for that. And then we've been able to actually get sponsorship for the meet and for the after surfing beers.
This must be a great opportunity for farmers to get away and just focus on a really positive experience.
Well, that's right. As Stephen says, when you're out surfing, you can only think about what you're doing and catching that next wave. And I think a lot of farmers are facing a lot of regulatory pressure at the moment, as well as some of the banks are really tightening up. And so a lot of them are really facing financial pressure, as well as there's been a bit of media flack about the farming industry, undoubtedly, in the last 12 months. So for them, it's actually an opportunity to get completely out of their environment. As one of the guys said to me last week, he's never done anything like this before, and I think that's it. It just takes them away from the farm and from their day-to-day lives and puts them in a completely foreign environment, and they just feel fantastic afterwards.
So how many farmers are here so far today?
I think we've got probably about 13 or 14, but it is a busy time of the year with weaning and everything else underway. We're also looking to move it to Gore Bay. I've heard that there's quite a few farmers up there who would be really keen if it just wasn't the travel, and that is completely understandable. So depending on finance, that's what we will be doing.
What's the oldest farmer you've had so far go out and do a bit of surfing?
Well, there's one who's about to turn up, and I know he's slightly older than me, so he'd probably be in his late 50s. But we've had, I know, and up in Gisborne, I think they had some people in there well into their 60s, and look, I would love to see a few older people down here, because a lot of farmers are working in isolation, so this actually gives them an opportunity to talk with others without, you know, getting into a situation where you're just talking farming all the time. You're actually out there talking surfing, and I think that's really healthy.
Now, most of the guys are already out there on their boards having a great time. What are the conditions like today?
Well, the cyclone that is travelling has hit the Pacific Islands pretty hard is actually sending some big swells our way tonight, so it's certainly a lot more challenging than it has been in previous weeks. So it'll be great for some of the guys that have been here for 3 previous weeks, because they'll be able to really extend themselves tonight.
Now, Andrew, you work for Lucetti Seeds?
Yeah, Cosmo. Yeah, I work for Lucetti Seeds up in Rangura and stooge around North Canterbury, basically, just dealing with farmers, looking at legumes and all that sort of stuff, yeah.
And what are you doing here today in Sumner?
Sandra said, look, would I come and help with the barbecue? So we swim together in the open water and all that drama. So, yeah, that's what I'm doing here. And what is really good about this work is, you know, I work with some of these farmers, some of these kids, you know, some of their parents, you know, and I see the daily pressures, you know, that at the moment it's extremely dry in North Canterbury, the east coast of the country, and I see, you know, the stress and the strain on their face. But I always think, look, I escaped to the city, to the life that I have, and I think, well, I have a respite. But often country folk don't get an opportunity. So I think the surfing initiative is something that's all-consuming. Look, they're going to be terrified out there. They'll come and pale. But they won't have thought about the sheep that they've got to crush tomorrow.
Chris, you've been out surfing. Are you a farmer?
Unfortunately, no. But just enjoying it and having fun. And I work for Rabobank. I'm an area manager.
And was this program something that you really wanted to get your teeth into?
Yeah, it was totally different, hey. And it's doing good for the community, eh?
And from what you've seen so far, do you think the farmers that have started surfing are getting a lot out of it?
Yeah, oh, very much so. So at the moment we've got mainly younger guys here, and it would be good to get some more mature guys as such, but I think it's making a start.
Yeah.
Yes.
And if we can just get more and more people, get it to grow, and it's going to be successful.
Now, you're the first person out of the water today. What's it like out there?
It's a bit more tiring today. Like, the surf's a wee bit bigger. The water's being pushed across to the left, and they're a bit concerned about the rip down here, so they've got us out a couple of times to go back up the top end of the beach. But it's just something about being in salt water. It turns everything again, you know, around, and you see the balance of things, so I think it's great.
Tim, you've just come in. What was it like out there?
Kind of like what I expected, because I like the sea, but, you know, struggling around there with a board. Plenty of short, sharp little waves.
Does it help you to forget about the farm and everything that's going on today?
Well, I reckon if I could catch waves a bit more, I'd have no thoughts of the farm.
Is this something that you think you might continue?
Oh, I'd love to. I love the water. And, you know, what a cool thing to do. Midweek, come out. Yeah.
And where do you farm?
South of Christchurch at Leeston.
Now, Rory, what was it like out there?
Yeah, pretty rough. It was good, though.
Did you get some good waves?
Yeah, some good ones out there today.
Yeah?
Coming in pretty hot, but they were good. Yep, it was definitely something different, something getting off the farm. And, yeah, there's nothing more going through your head than trying to catch the next wave and get back out there.
What farm are you from?
Ferniehurst, North Canterbury.
So that's quite a hike coming down here.
Yeah, 2 hours, about 2 hours drive.
Yep.
Yeah, no, it's really good. We come in with a group of us.
How important is it for you as a farmer to do something like this? Because farmers are under a lot of pressure nowadays, aren't they?
Yeah, absolutely. No, it's really important, I think, especially around the mental health thing now. You know, like so much attention going towards people's mental health and trying to get farmers off the farm and thinking about other things. And yeah, I reckon it's really important to especially get these young fellas off the farm, like myself, and yeah, try something different and yeah, just forget about the day and just solely focus on a bit of sport.
Soon we're going to smell the pleasant aromas of the barbecue. You must be starving.
Yeah. Huge shout out to Beef and Lamb for that, yeah. They've done well, and Rabobank for supplying a few cold ones afterwards. Nothing like a few tubes after a surf.
Now, Rosie, where are you from?
I'm from Cheviot as well. And I'm from like a horticulture farm, so we do lettuce and broccoli and supply all the supermarkets around the South Island.
How important is this for you, just to, you know, get off the farm and do something totally different?
Oh, it's so nice. There's something different about being on water. It's like very freeing compared to being like on the land and just, you know, at water you kind of get a little bit more weightless and it's like a breath of fresh air in my eyes. And it's quite nice for us to meet new people because, you know, you're on a farm and you're so isolated. You know, you've just got you and your workers. Yeah, it's nice to, like, meet other people and, you know, they're probably doing the exact same thing we're doing. So
yeah.
It's like, oh, you've had a hard day at work? So have I. Kind of thing, you know.
Did you get any waves, any good waves?
Yeah, I got a few. It was rough, so I was kind of battling out there, but definitely got a few to come in and then took the rips out to get at the back of the set, so it was quite cool.
So this is the third week of surfing, isn't it?
Yes, this is week three, and the first week they came down here and it was really perfect conditions. It was a dying southerly, but there was enough of a swell, and within 4 minutes we had guys up. It was unbelievable. I couldn't believe it. And I think there's a lot of scientific evidence coming through now about the mental health benefits of cold water. And look, I know I'm an open water swimmer. I know that feeling of well-being, and I just love seeing them come in with that big grin on their faces because I know what it feels like.
Surfing for Farmers Canterbury coordinator Sandra Taylor on Sumner Beach. And if you're keen to do some surfing or support the Surfing for Farmers initiative, go to the Surfing for Farmers website.
What I like about living in the country is I don't have to drive to work. No neighbours. Yeah, good scenery, you're outdoors.
What I like best about living in the country is getting to see the sunrise every morning.
Country Life, 101 FM.
Now, a story about a team of boys from Wairarapa who've set up a honey business to help fund their university education. Sally donned a bee suit to see what they do, but first stopped by a market to watch the young sales team in action.
So that's the crystallised version, so it's quite gritty.
It's a beautiful spring day, and the Ashura honey stall is humming at this Christmas market near Masterton. Members of the start-up sales team are offering tastings and fielding questions from a steady flow of customers.
So it'll start off like this, coming from the barrel.
I'm George Eschenbach, and I kind of pride myself on being a sales manager.
George is the youngest of the Eschenbach boys. They teamed up with their friends, the Williams boys, to produce and sell Ashura honey.
So I'm 15, Freddie's 17, Thomas is 16, Henry's 18, Jack's 18, and my oldest brother is 21.
George, Freddie and Thomas have got good at schmoozing the customers while their brothers have been at uni.
Have a good day. Oh, you can put your stick in there. Big smile and a happy hello. That normally gets their attention, especially with the older ones. They always love young boys just setting up business.
So you're playing on your charms, really, aren't you?
Yeah, pretty much.
I do more the stuff at the stalls and farmers' markets, whereas the older guys do the hands-on work out at the farm and making sure like there's no diseases or transporting it around the farm.
And how did you get the sales manager's job?
Everyone else was unavailable for the first week of the farmers market. So me, mum and dad all kind of went down there, us three. And I kind of just enjoyed it and kind of prided myself as it. And now I'm kind of seen as it, so.
What do you think you're good at and what have you learnt in the sales business?
Just to be enthusiastic, because without enthusiasm, people aren't like drawn in or anything. They're kind of just like, oh, that guy doesn't want to be here. So by like having a positive attitude and drawing people in, it just makes the customer happy as well as yourself because you made the sale. So. So that's the crystallised version, so it's quite gritty comparing to this liquid.
Did you get any tips from anyone at all about how to sell?
A lot of tips from Dad, because he sells rural insurance. So kind of learnt. That's where he taught me just to, no matter the mood, you just got to suck it up and be happy and just make the customer feel comfortable, really.
Dad is Peter Eschenbach.
Yeah, we had bees as young kids, so it's not unusual. So probably 30 years later, we had an opportunity to look at getting back into bees, and really the whole motivation was how do we offset costs for the boys' university fees, and it's something that we can do as a family. So we joined up with Guy and Kim Williams, and they've got a huge farm, so we've gone 50-50 with them, so and our boys go through the same years, so it's been quite a good sort of arrangement. We've done all the exams, and like I do a bit of the husbandry, I oversee that with the boys, so very rarely do I ever go out by myself, because someone's going to come with me and work the hives. Two of the boys are at university at the moment, so like Thomas and Freddie and George are all at school still, so they get tapped, and they're always out there with us. Yeah, it's just fun working with kids, and then you see them out selling it and getting pretty enthusiastic, and it's, you know, they start off stuttering around, but now they actually love the product and they're pretty passionate about it, because I've actually seen from building the boxes right through to starting off with little small nukes and then going to full hives, and then actually harvesting was our first year, and getting told by Manuka New Zealand that this was really high grade honey.
When do the boys get time to do all the work?
Between rugby and tennis and everything else in school, after hours. Late nights, in summer sometimes we work to 2 or 3 in the morning because it's balmy and you're in the zone, so you just keep going. So in school holidays, that's our busy time, so they're free, but they've got their daytime jobs as well.
This is to fund their education, or is that just a marketing?
No, it's definitely was the intent is to fund some of their university fees, and you know, if they can get $10,000 a year each out of it, that's what they're looking for, just to subsidise them so they don't come out with huge debt. Work hard, play fair, that's how they play rugby, so they apply this to this business, and you know, they'll get rewarded for it.
And how's it going financially so far?
Yeah, good. This is the first season of selling, so we'll get a lot more honey this year, and The market, if you look at the honey market, that's dropped since the Manuka has changed the whole market, and there's a lot of people hurting out there. There's beekeepers closing up everywhere. I shouldn't say everywhere, but there's quite a few closing up who've been at it for quite a while. So it's about actually just getting out there and marketing it. And a lot of beekeepers in the past haven't marketed their own honey. They've just sold it like wholesale and made a good living. So we're sort of doing the other way around, I suppose, is we're marketing it and selling it ourselves. And it seems to be going really well, and it's on the internet and getting sales off that. And yeah, so it's about actually having a good storyline, and people buy off kids more than they buy off us. So we can, mum, you know, like Jane and myself can stand behind here and things like that, but they'll always talk to kids, and they like the kids' enthusiasm, and they know they're doing the work, so it's an authentic story, and people like it and they buy it.
The M1's crystallised, and that's just quite a pasty sort of one. Yep. And then it just, as it decrystallises, it goes into a raw, it's all pretty much raw. But that's raw honey, and that's just a runny honey. So that's just a bit thicker than that one, but it's, yeah.
Each of the boys has a role to play in the startup, which has been in the planning with the help of their parents for the past couple of years.
Tell me what you do, Thomas.
Oh, I pretty much sort of just help out around stalls and just, yeah, just like Jules, try and do a bit of business. I haven't really got involved with the bees out at home. Yeah, but just sort of this stuff.
Do you like this side of the business better than the actual making of the honey?
It seems a bit more cruisy. Less stings and less less painful until you get snobbed by the old customers. But
does that happen often?
No. You sort of reel them in, sort of get the trick of the trade, I guess. And yeah.
That'll be $20, thank you. Have a great day and enjoy your honey.
Did you?
Thanks a lot. Yeah. It's that social side of always being friendly and, like, even not judging customers. Like, people kind of have that appearance, like, oh, he may be, like, intimidating, but deep down, like, everyone's kind of kind, so you really enjoy your honey.
Oh, thank you very much. Yeah. I will.
Have a good day.
You too. Thank you.
I suppose the hardest part was just trying to learn a bit actually about the honey, and like what to say and stuff like that. So $20 for a tub, for one of those, and the little ones on top are $10.
Okay. And the money side of it, is that something that's urging you to go forward?
It's helpful. Well, we want to for uni fees, so it helps in the future. So if we do get in debt, well, we've got a backup plan. But yeah, it's also just work experience for life. Thank you.
And where have you picked up all your knowledge about honey so that you can tell the customers?
A lot of research and out in the field. From being out in the field, because Dad was the kind of main one who kind of taught all of us boys how to work with the bees out on the farm and how to care for them. So, and then from there we've kind of all just learnt how to do it.
In the last few months, the boys have received the official tick to be able to sell the honey.
If we didn't get that, we wouldn't be here today and selling any honey. So that was a big one. With just a lot of the registration is just keeping the honey clean and making sure that you're not like putting any yucky stuff into the honey. We use a lot of visual kind of text when we're pouring honey to see if anything's yuck in there. We also just have a whole like sanitised room, just where it's strictly like clean shoes, clean hands, like sanitised. Because if we have any stuff going to the honey, well, food poisoning, and if you have that, well, that's your business over.
The Eschenbach boys' mother, Jane, helps with the design side of things, including the stall's rustic look.
A lot of people have actually commented on that, how cool it is.
Kind of just use kind of nature and pine cones just to bring out the honey of like the yellow and the brightness of it. And we also use like red and cherries and just lemons and stuff, and that just brings up the honey and makes the stall look less boring. So it kind of brings out the colours.
Whose idea was it?
That was Mum's, and yeah, mainly Mum's. We first set up and we've kind of just adapted to the... So today us boys will set this up without Mum's help.
It may be early days for the money-making side of things, but George says there are other advantages to being involved.
So I do commerce, which is actually really helpful for learning business. The next year I'm doing economics.
Is this business helping you with your studies?
Oh, yeah, I think it is, because I've had straight E's this year, so that's quite good. it's good just to have that work, like that life kind of experience, because when you're writing it, you're like, oh, that's relatable, that's easy to write about.
Well, I know you're only 15 at the moment, but can you see yourself going into a sort of a business career, being an entrepreneur in any way after this experience?
Yeah, I guess a few people have called us entrepreneurs, but I don't know, see what happens, and if it keeps going, well, I'll keep going as well.
I'll let you get on with your job, because you've got customers flocking.
It's time to check out the honey production unit, which the older boys are involved with. And before we get into our bee suits, Dad Peter runs through who does what.
Jack is probably the most astute around the husbandry side of things. So he runs that and looks for disease and makes sure we've got good brood patterns and things like that. And we all try and find the queens, because they're quite difficult, because some of them haven't been painted, so you've got to be quite quick with your eyes to actually find them. So he does that side of things, and George Hargood, he does the grunt work, all the lifting, and, well, in Jack's term, he's a gopher, because it's hard work, it's heavy work. So, yeah, but they're all getting quite skilled at it. What I find is young eyes are very sharp compared with old eyes. You know, like, they can just spot things so much quicker. Even just a minute change of cells and things like that, you know, you're looking for varroa and you're looking just for little pinholes, and they can find all that. They're quite quick at finding the queen bees compared with myself, and we're looking at the same thing. So they put it down to age. I say it's young eyes, so it depends which way you want to look at it.
So you've got
Big George, yeah.
Big George,
yep. And then we've Henry, got... and then we've got Harry. He's just all action. You just tell him what to do, and he just grunts out the heavy work as well. Yeah, everyone's just got a role, and they just sort of fall into it. And you know, one day someone else might be the lifter. And
is there anyone that stands out as the decision maker?
Probably Jack. He just quietly goes about things and tells people what to do. He's an organised person, and he will direct the workflow.
And you've had other boys wanting to join the group, haven't you?
Yeah. Oh, yeah, they all want to come out and experience it. Because bees are very therapeutic. It's very calming. If you can get over the thought of being stung, and that very, very rarely happens.
Can get hot in these outfits.
Oh, it gets very, very, very sweaty.
Have you ever been stung?
Have we got an opportunity for you, Sally?
How likely is it that I'm going to get stung?
Kind of likely. I've been stung for a while.
What's happening here?
Talk us through it, Jack.
We're just seeing whether or not there is enough brood, because if there's not, you'll get the weak one and merge it together. So brood is enough bees, or see, like, the brood's down the bottom there. And the lighter stuff's normally honey, so there's actually no honey in this one. That's basically all just baby bees.
So you see there's quite a few drones in this one.
Mm-hmm.
They're the bigger, fatter ones here.
Male bees. All they do is eat. They don't do anything to help the hive.
Mm.
So what we're actually going to try and do is see if we can find the queen at the same time, Jacko. Keep an eye out.
The queen's looks like a normal bee, but long.
It'll probably be
on the bottom.
Bottom. So let's just try and take this one off.
Put the lid back on. Yeah, move these boxes. Yeah.
What's the smoker for?
Stops them swarming as much, because sometimes you get the old angry bees, especially midday, because that's when they're most active. So you take the likelihood of being stung away.
Calms them down as well and confuses them. This is the varroa strips, which is for the American fruit brood, which is all clear, which is really good, so it means that they're not diseased. So we'll take those out, because they've been there for about 7 weeks, 8 weeks. It's a parasite, and it can wipe out the whole bee industry, so you've got to be very vigilant. We put it in twice a year. So, Jack, if we have a look at this one now, and we'll start.
So we're going to go through all of it?
Yeah, we'll see what the brood looks like.
And look out for the queen, are we?
Yep.
So there's a lot of honey, but not much of a brood.
So that's really good brood pattern. See how solid it is? So they're just building it out there. So this brown bit is good and solid. So if you look over this side,
a little bit more patchy, but it's still pretty solid, which is...
There's more of it.
Yeah.
Jack, how much study have you done about bees? Was it mostly learning on the job, or did you do some research?
I'd done nothing before we started. Done a little bit more now, and like because you talk to different people, and a few different interesting little facts you pick up here and there. It's surprising how like complex, but like because little things can just ruin a whole hive. Like if you moved a hive from here, like 5 meters away over there, a lot of them would die because they wouldn't find their way home because of that beacon. So if you're going to move them, you have to go in at night when they're all in, like close it and tie it down and move them like that. Just see how fragile they are, but vital at the same time. Well, no bees, there's not going to be too much life, so it's pretty fundamental that we actually look out for them and make sure the bees get first priority, really.
Well, I'm feeling quite comfortable around the bees now. I've got them swarming all around me, and I'm actually feeling quite comfortable. Did it take you a while to get comfortable with the bees?
Yeah, because we didn't have the smoker at first. And when we got some nukes from up in Napier, which is just when you get like lots of bees in a small box, basically. And then they were black and they were real aggressive. And we didn't have a smoker, and we got stung a lot. I got stung 17 times in one evening.
Even with your suit on?
Yeah, I was getting stung in the chest because I was wearing a thin top, and like so I was fairly new to it. I was in shorts and I was bending over, getting stung in the knees.
One of the boys' friends, George Hargood, was also keen to get involved, and today he's working the smoker.
The smoker pretty much just sort of makes the bees more docile and more calm while you're trying to like interact with them, and especially it's like essential around times like this during midday when they're more active. So yeah, it's a good tool to have.
And that seems to be what you've been doing. That's your main job. But what else do you do in the business?
Oh, we sort of just share it around. Lifting hives, doing the smoker, and yeah.
There's a lot of different things you've got to do with it.
Yeah.
And George, why did you want to get involved in this?
I just thought it was a fun time with the boys, really. That's pretty much it.
It's often just me, George, and Henry. We get sent out with a few tasks and you get the music going and you're bobbing along at night.
Yeah, no, it's good.
With
it's
the bees. Really good. Hanging out with the bees.
Yeah, that's really good.
George, is this something that you think you might want to get into later, or is it just fun at the moment?
It's just fun at the moment, but I could see myself owning a hive somewhere down the line.
And you're studying as well?
Yeah, I'm down at Otago studying marketing. So,
are you bringing some of your marketing nous to the business?
Not as of yet, but I would be more than inclined to if I was asked.
We will be asking George to look at our internet digital marketing, because I think we can do a whole lot better than we've done. We've got the basics, but it's about getting the right messaging, getting into the right areas and spaces and into the right market. So,
I definitely see it's definitely a huge theme at the moment with most businesses. There's a huge social media presence these days, so it could be something to look into to develop that further, for sure. Yeah.
Now, you've got this story, the boys and the bees. How important is it to have a story?
Well, I feel like it could definitely push home, maybe sway some people to maybe buy from us as opposed to someone else if they sort of connect with the story. So, yeah, it could be a nice angle.
Because there are a lot of honey businesses out there. I saw at the fair there were at least 3, maybe 4, 5 honey stalls.
Yeah, but they don't have the story which we have, so, yeah.
One of the other things we're sort of dreaming about, and we don't quite know how to do it, so that's when we're going to pull these boys in the next 12 months together, is how do we go international? So there's a bit of a glut in the market at the moment, and we want to actually promote Wairarapa honey overseas and get all some of the growers have got all this glut there, but actually just find a vehicle, I suppose, a digital vehicle for us to get it into Europe. But we're actually promoting the Wairarapa bee industry, just and see where that goes, because there's a lot of families out there who are reliant on it for an income and they're really struggling at the moment. So we sort of see that as could be a possible give back, and if we can just really promote Wairarapa as a region to the world and things like that, that's fantastic too. So that's a dream. I don't know how we're going to do it, but these boys with their marketing skills and university expertise is hopefully going to help us, and we've probably got connections, so we want to try and tap into that and just move the product and promote Wairarapa general. So,
and what's special about the Wairarapa honey?
Oh, besides being the best honey in the world, and like the you know the clover-based floral pastoral, it's just sensational. Like you've tasted it, and wow, did you buy 5 or 6 punnets? I'm not sure, but but yeah, there's a beautiful story around the Wairarapa. It's a great place to live. It's sheep and beef. There's a bit of dairy. There's a bit of everything going on here, and there's a big organic push as well in this area. And I think there's a great story to be told. You always got to keep thinking what's out there and how you can do something better, smarter. How can we help the industry? Because I think if you're going to be part of an industry, you've got to get involved in it and make sure it's strong and solid and people can make a living off it.
Peter Eschenbach talking to Sally Round.
And that was the first Country Life program for 2020. Another 47 to go. We'll talk again next week. Have a great weekend.
Ka kite.
Bye.